history interview is with Frankie Zalaznik. Today's date is January 22nd, 2003. And I thought we would just maybe get started if you just want to tell me a little bit about yourself. I know that's a kind of an imposing question, but you can just start wherever you'd like. If you want to just talk about, start with like where you were born, when you were born. And
okay, I was born in Cannonsburg, Pennsylvania, October 9th, 1949. And then went to high school. And when I graduated, I was like 17. So went into nursing school 1967 and graduated in 1970. And it's it was a Leoness Kaufman School of Nursing. It was a diploma school nursing, no college credits. We okay. were.
So when you finished, you didn't actually have a degree, was it? Or did
it's a diploma.
Diploma. Okay.
Okay. In nursing, there's still some diploma programs out there. There's some ADNs and of course BSNs and then even mm-hmm. masters and PhDs. In my senior year in nursing school. I decided that I wanted to join the Student Army Nurse Corps, which right. It was for monetary values. I wanted to help pay for my, because I had a loan for my nursing, and I wanted to help with that. So as a senior, I received pay like PFC. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a DD-214 retiring me from active duty as a student nurse before I went into the military itself.
Okay.
Which is
okay.
strange.
Yeah.
It's probably like an ROTC or
That's the way I was imagining it as
right.
ROTC.
So but it's not, it wasn't, it was special just for nurses.
Okay. And you did that, your incentive for doing that was primarily
money
to get your
yeah.
school paid for. And
right. Well, I knew I didn't want to stay in Pittsburgh, the nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Because still there was, at that time, there was a lot of steel mills. It was dirty. You had to drive anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half to come in town. And, you know, there's where the big hospital was. So I knew that if I went to the military, I might get to travel a little bit.
But the time period that you were in school, though, 67 to 70, I mean, that was right in the height of Vietnam going on. What were the sentiments of some of your colleagues, your other students at the campus? Where it
wasn't campus, it was a building,
okay.
and it was seven stories, and you were locked in at 7:30 at night. The study hour. Yeah, they come
very
around.
Strict.
Very strict. No men above the third floor. You weren't allowed to be married. You couldn't have children.
Wow.
If you got pregnant, you got kicked out.
Yikes. That is strict.
Yes, it was. At that time, that was normal for
right.
the nursing programs. You know, you wore dresses. They're, you know, nowadays students have the opportunity to, let's talk about this, about my grade.
Uh-huh.
You didn't then
yeah.
at all. I mean, that
it was black and white.
That was it. That was where it was. And most of us, I don't think what was going on in the world was really keyed in. We knew something was going on. I can remember the riots in Pittsburgh in
68,
because we were locked up for a whole week. I mean, the only way we could get to the hospital was the underground tunnel.
Uh-huh.
And you were so into the nursing role and
studying
and the group peer of the good grades and
right. that you weren't really aware all that
it was,
much.
It was,
you
know, at that point, no. I was like, every once in a while you'd see something on news
mm-hmm.
or you'd hear about the rioting.
Yeah, right.
Probably more about the rioting than the problem with blacks versus whites type
mm-hmm.
stuff in Pittsburgh, you know. Squirrel Hill was all Jewish. Oakland was maybe half Jewish, and then you got down in the Fifth Avenue down in there was more black. So
when you said you were in lockdown for a week,
uh-huh.
that was during when the rioting was
uh-huh.
going on. They actually
yeah, we
wouldn't
couldn't
let
walk.
You
no.
leave.
Well, you could see in nursing school, well, the program I was in, you were only allowed out to have two night overnighters a week. So if you went home on the weekend, that was it. And as a not until you were a senior maybe did they let you out at night. During the week, because normally you had to stay in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Completely different than what it is now.
Definitely. But then your senior year, you joined the Army.
Student Army Nurse Corps,
and then from there you actually went into
When I graduated from nursing school in June, and in July we took our boards, I actually had to wait till October when I was 21 because they wouldn't take me in as a nurse till I was 21.
Huh.
San Antone was basic. There was probably about 230 to 240 doctors, nurses, respiratory therapist, nutritionist, veterinarian type people. So, and it wasn't basic, like normal basic. It was more of a fun time because, well, there was, you know, that I can remember there was a group of about six of us ladies and probably about, 7 to 10 guys that we were a clique. We hanged out mm-hmm. together all the time. And had to go to classes usually started at 8 and till 3 in the pit, which is the club there in the quadrangle, opened at 3:30. So you had a half hour wait before you went to the club opened, and you usually stayed and partied and danced until it closed at night, and then you went out on town sometimes and found another place.
Sounds like your basic training was actually more enjoyable than your school experience.
Oh, it was. It was freedom for me. I mean, it's total freedom and a lot of camaraderie with the opposite sex, because when I went to nursing school, the majority of the time you were studying. When I first started, maybe I went to a frat party or two, and then I decided I didn't like this at all. So, you know, I didn't go to too many of those.
So when you decided to actually join the Army, were you thinking in the back of your mind that you might have to go to Vietnam? Or
no.
were you just thinking this was a logical place for you to be to pursue nursing?
Just because I wanted to travel. I wanted to do something different. So no, it didn't even
sit
there.
You weren't thinking about that at all?
No, no.
Okay.
You have to realize I was kept in a kind of naive world. Mm-hmm. If you were locked up,
yeah.
I mean, if your main objective in life was to study and get good grades, it's like you didn't go out
well,
and party.
Well, I think there were
lot.
Probably a lot of Americans who weren't really affected by the Vietnam War early on. You know, I don't know, but I get that impression that, like, my family and my parents, they weren't all that impacted by it.
Well, it's also like, you know, World War II, we were isolated. We decided
mm-hmm.
to isolate ourselves.
Right.
And I perceived a lot of people, unless they knew somebody
right.
over in the war.
Unless they had a relative who was fighting, maybe they blocked it out.
And, you know, you didn't have the news coverage like you do now. This was CNN. Back there, you know, if Walter come on with something, or Dan Rather, you know, because they were news reporters at that time over there, well, then, you know, you got some idea, but still, you know, I just think people were still into that middle class American. If you watch the new TV show American Dream, mm-hmm. that's it. I mean, that's basically what people were doing.
Yeah. So when you joined up, how did your family feel about you joining the military?
My mother was not real happy about it at all. My dad thought was kind of proud because he'd been a 4F. Could not go into World War II. He had busted eardrums, and now his other family. Though he did help because they worked they had a farm and they were produce, and he talked about taking it into Pittsburgh for the, you know, during the war to provide food for other people.
Uh-huh.
So my mother was not happy now. But well, at that point, you know, she wasn't going to do a whole lot about it.
So after boot camp, what was the first hospital?
I got my first tour of duty was Walter Reed Medical Center in D.C.
Okay.
And I was on a septic orthopedic ward in the back. It was 48 patients, and they were majority have young men from 17. I think the oldest maybe was 34. Had stepped on mines or had booby traps of some sort, or bouncing Bettys, or have been shot by AKs. You know, most majority more amputees.
Wow.
Not only one limb, two limbs, four limbs. In fact, they had the one guy, Kenner, I think was his last name, there who was quadruple amputee and one eye gone, and they did a special on him in 60 Minutes several years ago because he ended up being the head of the VA in New York. And I can remember taking care of him, and he had his girlfriend were there, and she was very devoted to him that time. So when you're on a ward with young men who've been to war, you get an idea what it's like over there, because most of them didn't sleep at night. They had bad dreams, a lot of pain.
So you, you worked in the hospital for, a year before you actually got your orders to go to Vietnam.
Right.
So after having seen all of that before you ever went, how did that affect your attitude? Were you?
Because they were my men. I had to go take care of them.
So you were happy to go?
No, I wasn't. I can't say happy.
Okay.
That's not
a good word.
No, that was my job.
Right. You just felt like...
That was my obligation.
That's what you had been trained to do, and you could be...
I could take care of them.
You could deal with it.
I mean, they were... I felt probably more conditioned to know what I was going into than a lot of nurses who joined up to go to help because they wanted to help. And there was a lot of nurses who got into the ambivalent part of seeing Americans injured and you still had to take care of the Vietnamese or the VC, and you got missed messages because you were expected to take care of both and you didn't want to take care of both. Because when you were, I can remember being, the wards were like in Quonset huts. And let me show you a picture.
Okay.
But that wasn't the first place.
So when did you actually get your orders that you were going?
See, here's the big picture.
Okay, so this is, we're looking at a picture of the
9050 back. That's on the South China Sea. That is officially China Beach.
Okay, but this is not the first place where you went.
No.
Okay.
So these Quonset huts is what. They're big buildings.
They're big white buildings. What were they made out of?
Just tin.
Tin.
Okay. See how big they
are.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got several pictures of that. Aerials.
Here's one like what the chapel looked like.
Okay.
So. One side of the, you'd have a Quonset hut, and then you have a breezeway or walkway in between. One side would be the GI side, the other side would be the Vietnamese side. And it's real hard mentally to see the Vietnamese side where they had all the crackers and the cookies and everything that they had got when they came in to be unloaded to go to the little PX, and the GIs wouldn't get it. All the Vietnamese would have that stuff. Hmm. I mean, so there was a lot of missed messages and a lot of nurses who have a lot of turmoil with taking, you're supposed to be taking people's life, but these guys are killing your own guys.
Right. And you're saving their lives and patching them up, and
you,
then where
you don't particularly want to.
Right. And then after you did that, they would be released to go back to herding your guys.
That's right. Exactly what they would do. They thought nothing to throw in. The law was at that time, I'll give you an example. If a GI shot a water buffalo, then the government had to pay for the cost of the buffalo at that time. All the heirs or possible buffaloes he would have sired, and all the good stuff for the rest of the term of life a buffalo would live.
Right.
And the GI, the Americans
had to pay.
The military had to pay these Vietnamese this money. Chickens, same way. Kill a chicken, you had to pay all that. You had to pay for the chicken. You had to pay for all the eggs the chicken would have hatched, and other PPs and on the whole thing. But they thought nothing of throwing their kids in front of an APC, because they knew that the Americans would pay care of the children, and they would have be paid money also because of the life of the child.
So that
for the rest of their month.
They intentionally would hurt their own children to be able to be taken care of.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Okay, and then, you know, when they had some of the VCs in there, and they would be belligerent and strike out at some of the nurses, it wouldn't be unlikely that some of the MPs would take hold of this prisoner and maybe beat him up. Maybe take a knife and start stripping his hide off. Was it nothing? Did I get upset? No. Because, you know, it's war.
Right. What good would it do you to...
There was so much mutilation and so much pain that went on that that's the reason why you have a lot of people who did not tolerate it at all. Now, whether the majority of the nurses who went over there came back, got out of nursing, because they couldn't tolerate it anymore. I mean, I still keep in contact with several ladies that were nurses with me. One of them became a psych clinician for the VA. She also stayed in reserve. One of them quit nursing and then became a psych social worker. One of them stayed in the same day surgery as a nurse. One of them was in the OR. Two of them have the stress syndrome in VA pensions. The other lady, she's had five vessel bypass surgery at age 55. Okay.
Well, I noticed in your biography that actually you were out of the military. When you came back to the States, you served another year in a hospital, and then you got out for 10 years. Was that in
relation? Oh, when I came back from Vietnam, I was angry, hostile. I mean, I really was because of what was going on, and I didn't know what the military was going to be like coming back, because that year as Walter Reed was not normal military. I mean, there was a lot of freedom in there. More so because it was taking care of sick people. You know, when you're a nurse, it was a little bit alleviation. Then you went to Vietnam, and there was what military regulations did you have there? I came back stateside. When I came back, they gave me. I was on a ward with a head nurse who'd been in World War II. She'd actually been one of the warrant officers. At one time they tried to make nurses warrant officers in World War II. She had that position. Now she stayed there and at Fort Meade, Maryland, was in charge of surgical ward. So she was kind of, I must have intimidated her because she put me on nights to keep me away from her. You know, I didn't care. I mean, these patients weren't really sick. We took care of them. One of the corpsmen I had been with me in Nam, and, you know, he did his, I told him, I knew he smoked pot. I didn't care about it. Our working relationship is, you do my vital signs, you do your chores, I don't care what else you do.
Right.
And we got along fine.
Mm-hmm.
So resentment kept building up, and then I said, this is it.
That's it. So,
but I resigned my commission. I mean, I did the whole thing when I did it.
And what was your rank while you were in Vietnam?
I went over there as a butter bar second lieutenant, and then I became a first lieutenant.
Okay. While you were there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, okay.
Do you remember what your thoughts were when you shipped out? Do you remember what, when you first found out you were going, what your initial reaction was?
It's the day I came, got my orders, my mother yelled and screamed, you volunteer. No, I didn't volunteer, I came down on levy.
You didn't volunteer?
No, my number came up.
See, I thought that all the nurses in Vietnam were
volunteer. No. Because some of the nurses, well, my one friend had been in Germany before she went to Walter Reed. One of my friends had been at Fort Knox. I mean, once you get in the military, they can send,
they send you wherever
you want to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of them, I think they did just sign up initially to go to Vietnam. But at that point, I didn't. So when I got my orders, I had a date that night and went out. It was a ward master back ramp, and he was an older, he was in his 30s, not that older. And we went to see the sand pebble, quite interesting, because it was a, it's a, you know how it's a war picture. Mm-hmm. The night we found out on TV that we were going to the Desert Storm, we were watching The Hunt for Red October. The funny part about watching, there was 9 other people in my unit who were watching The Hunt for the Red October that night,
that
too.
That night? Yes. Independently of each other?
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, yeah. So we're all waiting, this, you know, whatever the movie is. But so it's like, okay. I knew what I was getting into. You guys had already warned me.
Right.
And
you had already, you'd already seen a lot of the guys. You'd been a
not
nurse.
Not fresh, I mean.
Right, but you had dealt with the ramifications of war.
Type of thing. So I got on, went to Travis, you got on a plane, big plane. I was in, the only other women on the plane was the two hostesses. I was the only other
You
woman.
Were the only one.
Uh-huh. And you go, you went to, let's see, Hawaii for a stop, and then we went to Okinawa for a stop, and then you went to Saigon. And in Saigon, you were in a little clearing station area, and I'm still the only woman. Then they put me on a...
How did you feel about being the only woman? Did that,
well,
were you okay with that, or?
It's like, well, okay. This is what, I mean, because the term round eye would become known to me very well, because I was a round eye. That's what American females were. They looked at you, so. Put me on another big plane. You had to be on manifest, you know. We had to sit there in these great big huge like warehouse Quonset huts waiting to take off. And had to go up to Da Nang and stayed over there at the hospital until I could catch the plane next morning to go to Phu Cat to get up to Pleiku. Okay. Okay. I mean, nothing was easy.
So Pleiku was the, you
original,
were there.
That's the original place I started.
Okay. And you were there for how, two and a half months or so?
I got over there November the 4th. The first pictures I have of Da Nang was on February, so we're about somewhere in that.
Couple months.
Yeah, in that area.
Mm-hmm.
See, these are just orders again.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Pleiku. This is the 14th Med Detachment. It was like, at one time, it had been the 71st evac, and one of the ladies, you can see here, one of the ladies who was with me in Desert Storm had been here the year before I got there.
Hmm. Talk about an interesting coincidence.
Small world. And this whole hospital had closed down to like one Quonset hut. And that was like a barn. I tell people, think of your in your mind a barn stanchion, because there was like a brick wall down the middle, and the one side was the American side, and the other side was the Vietnamese mountain yard side. And the first beds up front were like recovery room, then the surgery patients, then the medical patients.
And so you
there was only about 7 of nurses there.
And did you have certain patients who were assigned to you and you took care of them, or
you had the whole world.
Wow.
Okay.
I know where she is
because she was at the dedication of Vietnam Nurses Monument.
And see, her name was Abby.
Abby.
And
Wilbur was the dog.
Wilbur was her dog.
Fran, she was there at the dedication. She lives in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
This lady was married to a another MSC officer, and they're still in San Diego. One of the nurses is still in contact with these two, so we knew where they were at the reunion.
Okay. And the photo that you're describing is it's black and white with the three individuals in it.
And it wasn't anything, if there was no war going on, and you would sometimes had to scrub in to help with whole leg or something like that. I mean, even if you had duties out in the ward, because there just weren't a whole lot of us. Because two of the nurses worked in the OR. Okay. And usually there was just one for 12-hour shift, and you rotated around, that's all, 7 days a week. This was a med cap. This is one of the lot of hospital places sent out doctors and nurses to take care of different people in the mountain yards. There was a lady doctor by the name of Pat Smith, and she had a hospital. She's a civilian, she's American, up in Cantun. And people would in America would send her supplies to take there.
So the photo is your group. And the vehicle in the back is you would travel with your supplies
or helicopter.
Okay.
And he was just a civilian who worked with the doctor.
Can you explain what the Mountain Yard people are? Just
they're Aborigines. There's like the Australian people because they live outside. This would be a basket a child would carry, and everything they would carry would be in there, or they would fill it up with rice and hide it because they were afraid the VC would come and steal it.
And the bracelet that you donated to the museum?
That was a Mountain Yard bracelet. It's one of the, it got into be a ritual. The Mountain Yard chief would invite several people, doctors and stuff, to his village, and there'd be a pot of rice wine. And it was just a drinking ritual to get your bracelet. Right. Right. We had good times doing that. Let me see if I have.
What did the bracelet have any meaning?
The chief honored you enough
to give it to you.
To give it to you was what it was. Okay. Most of the Mountain Yard, the ladies would have their front teeth knocked out because you knew they were married, so that they couldn't ever remarry. I mean, they were their life.
So they were marked for life.
Here was his Mountain Yard pipe that they would use to smoke. I didn't bring back a crossbow. They didn't use crossbows. Huh. This would be like one of the pouches that carry other stuff.
Wow.
It was handmade, they'd weave it.
It's nice.
This is a necklace.
Would you say that your relationship with the Mountain Yard people was really good?
Oh, it's like any of the Vietnamese.
Did you trust them?
Nah.
No.
Nah.
Not at all.
I didn't trust any of them. The Mountain Yards, they had a pretty rough life because the VC would come in and hurt them. I mean, these poor people were just out there living. They're just trying, like I read the Aborigines, like I said, in Australia. They just wanted to be left alone, run their normal life, and they'd be raided and killed and anything like that. So, and that there were really interesting people in the fact that their skin was so leather thick. It was really hard to put IVs in them because they lived outside all the time in the sun and the wind. And they did not do good inside. If you put them outside, they perked up and they did better. So we had a tent outside for a while for some of them so they could live outside rather than be inside the hospital.
And what types of injuries did you treat them for?
Stepping on mines, AKs, the usual burns, you name it. There weren't that many, but you know, they still got filtered in.
Right.
This is some contraband. That's Ho Chi Minh there with this Russian guy. These were picked up in a raid, given to me by another soldier. This was one of the belt buckles, because you can see this, it doesn't have the red, but normally it would have been painted red type thing that they would have wore. And it was interesting where we were. Camp Holloway was across the field, which we find out this field later on was mine.
Oh, and here you all, this played, is playing in it?
Yeah, with a picnic. We didn't know it was mine till later on. But
oh,
anyway.
Oh, gosh. How did you find out it was mine?
Just some word of mouth came through. Did y'all know that place was full of mine?
Whoops.
But anyway, we would be, you know, the alert would go out. The sirens go on. You knew that incoming was coming. And so you'd sit up on the bunkers in your lawn chairs watching the tracers that they were shooting over Camp Holloway where the helicopter was, were, knowing that any minute you'd go on red alert and you'd have to head for cover too. But it was like the fireworks because the tracers were so neat to watch all the time. But it's a female in military, both wars I've been into, you're pretty low man on the pole. You don't get any vehicles.
Just because of your sex? Because you probably had a higher rank than a lot of men who had other...
Well, but in the military, there's no reason to give a nurse a vehicle. It's not in the TONE, or Table of Organization Equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So to get anywhere, you had to hook a ride. And I'm not kidding. You had to beg, borrow, steal to get a ride if you wanted to go anywhere.
Right.
So it was, again, different type.
And did you
female, you're a nurse, you're not going to get any vehicles. Besides, the Saudi people didn't like women.
Right, that was a whole other issue.
No other issue. You know, they didn't like us running around BDUs or anything. We were, at the end, when we were finally allowed to go in town, the store owners wouldn't do anything unless you had a man with you. They wouldn't talk to a woman.
Well, I wondered what it was like to be in an Islamic country as a female.
If you're over there, and even now, even before there's a storm, you're locked up, and like there's nurses who go over there to earn money because it's tax free. You live on a post. And you're not allowed off. I mean, you're kind of strict type thing, but that's okay. I mean, I'm not going back. So, again, we went up. This was going up to Khartoum by air.
Aerial photos.
Right.
And then this photo, getting off the chopper. So.
And this was this Lake Ben Ho, that was the Vietnamese recreation camp. So I wasn't that far away from them either.
Yeah. What was the amount of casualties that were coming in? How frequently and how many men were you?
At that point, you know, they started that de-escalation stuff. So, it would be more sporadic coming in.
Mm-hmm.
The worst I can remember is Thanksgiving Day. One of the companies all got food poisoning. So you're talking about over 100 men coming in, throwing up nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, the whole thing.
That's awful.
Dysentery is probably one of the biggest casualties of war. Dysentery and dental problems.
Dental problems?
Yes. People do not take care of their teeth, and they end up with a lot of dental problems when they go to war.
I'm
dysentery because of the food facilities. Well, now
and
that
the
they've
water,
got
water, I guess.
Type
nice.
Thing get you.
Yeah. Oh, what are these?
These are just mountain yards. Well, these aren't. They're not. Some of them are, but these aren't really mountain yards. These are more just the Vietnamese kids, because the mountain yard kids, probably most of them didn't have any clothes on at all. This kid had been thrown in front of APC, and these two...
By their parents?
Yeah.
That just...
Blows your mind.
Blows your mind.
Blows your mind. Nah. I mean... I had no respect for the Vietnamese family life. None at all. Because of the way they treated the family as a whole. Because you always could get another kid. The better ones, though, who run...
Were girl children even considered less important than male, or were they all the same?
They were all the same. You can always get another
one. You always get more.
You know?
I mean, it was probably just another mouth to feed for them.
Well, yeah, half of them came from GIs.
Yeah.
More, because... Yeah. Commodity of the way the life was, but the better ones over in Iraq, they had a better family life because the kids were taken care of. If the mother or father was in the military, the grandmother, grandfather would take care of them. Type thing. As far as casualty, it's really hard for me to give you an exact amount and count.
And not really looking for exact,
because you,
you won't see any.
You won't see any. I mean, you won't see any bad American patients.
Right.
You might just see a few. But I just think there's so many of them. You didn't. What do you want to take a picture to remember this one?
Yeah,
I'm
sure it would have been inappropriate.
So this is the story about 95th to back. There was some stuff I shipped home.
What was the name of the first place you were again?
14th Med Detachment, Placut.
Placut. So then you transferred to the
Da Nang,
which you
actually Placut is up in the Highlands, and I went down to Da Nang.
Okay.
Now again, because there was the de-escalation, they were starting to people back out again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when I went to Da Nang, the 95th EVAC, it was probably at that time maybe 700 beds operating in February. And by August or September, we moved the hospital over to the Air Force Base. And we were probably down to 30 or 40 beds. So you were constantly...
Uh-huh.
Downsizing type thing.
Right.
So when
this, did you draw this?
No. This came along with this history that I picked up while I was over. So
okay, but this shows where you.
This is the China Beach,
mm-hmm.
And here's I Corps, and here's the present site, and then you had to go over across the river to get to the airbase.
Okay,
and they would fire at you from here.
From
Monkey Mountain. Now here's Marble Mountain. See POWs. So a lot of in going and out going.
And that you said they would fire actually on your on your hospital setup.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You had to deal with that.
To do the John Wayne low crawl. We had the snipers would come in through and start shooting at you too. You know, so they put the alert on. Hear gunfire, but you had to get over to the hospital at the same time because you had to go take care of people because
mm-hmm.
there wasn't enough people at the hospital. You're there.
As a nurse, were you allowed to have a firearm at all to protect yourself if need be?
Wasn't part of your TONE. The chief nurse and assistant chief nurse are the only one who's supposed to have weapons. That didn't mean I didn't have one.
I was going to say, how did you feel about
I had one.
Yeah.
There. When I went to the same thing going to Desert Storm, we weren't allowed to have one because it wasn't part of the TONE, and our commander would have known we would have shot him too, probably.
Liked him, did you?
He's still here in Frankfurt, thank you very much.
Okay.
Do you know Dr. Joe Dobner? He's an orthopod.
Dr. Dobner. That name is really familiar.
Yeah,
isn't
well,
okay.
If you know, he's very macho, Mary.
Uh-huh.
No, he's too male chauvinist for me, thank you.
Okay, one of those.
Very much so. So, again, it was hard. I didn't have one over there. So one or two of the other nurses, I think, were able to stash one way. But it wasn't as an excess to be able to get hold of them as it was when we were over Vietnam. Okay?
It was easier in Vietnam.
Yes.
Things were a little more lax.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're around everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You pick them up. When you went home, there's a freedom box. You just dropped them in. That's all you did.
That's funny.
Go ahead.
Were you in charge of other nurses while you were there?
Oh yeah. Well, like you were. usually a lot of the time you were the only nurse, so you had your corpsman. Now you I had in Da Nang at the 95th Vac, we had some Vietnamese nurses. They had gone to nursing school in Saigon, but you never knew if they weren't VC at the same time.
So you didn't really trust them, but you had to work side by side with them.
Work side by side, you know, because you'd have that same Thanksgiving where all those people got sick. We had a fairly decent Thanksgiving lunch, and we all thought, the nurses thought, oh, supper, well, leftovers. Honey, you saw all the leftovers walking out the gate before the end of the day. Because they would pick up, steal, take anything that they got their little hands on. You had to make sure it stayed secure, tied down.
So the relationship was not real, was not good. I mean,
no.
To say the least.
Well, you knew that already.
Yeah, but
it's the same as they put grenades on kids to go in them. See, told you this. They didn't care about life. Mm-hmm. Always get another person. That was the unit crest. It was for the 9050 back.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's pictures of how big it was, how it started out. This back here is the hooches or the living quarters that we lived in. This is like the mess hall in the back here quarters. Plywood, man, majority of it. And there's the officer's club.
In terms of your creature comforts in Vietnam, what was that? Were there any?
By the time I got there, you could acquire an air conditioner for your room. Somebody was going home deer roasting, you could buy it from them so you could have it. That was probably one of the biggest things you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You might get to go to the PX, because well, it wasn't very often that you got over there, because you're working 7 days a week. And usually working, usually would be 7 days, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., or 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. If it were, you were doing 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., they would give you a sleep day and then a day off before they switched to back on days again.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you took your sleep day as a day to go to the China Beach.
You were stationed pretty much right on the beach, right?
Yeah. Well, this is all Constantina wire around here, and there's
okay.
And there's station posts up there so they can watch. You can see them up here where they can watch for snipers and shoot at people,
right.
And so. This beach right here is actually the outhouse for the Vietnamese around our area, because they'd go by down and squat and take a shit every day. You can see all of them. So this part, no, was not safe.
Uh-huh.
Now the China Beach that was the R&R center.
Uh-huh.
Well, we had that picture back here. Right here, see China Beach and PX?
Right.
Okay, this was actually... had Constantina wire and GIs watching so that you could have it like a day off, because actually it was a R&R center in country that some of the GIs after they came out of the field would get to go their day
kind
or
of
two.
Like what you see on the TV show China Beach.
Yeah.
Kind of the, so is this what the show was based off of?
I never watched it because
why did you choose not to watch?
Because I didn't think it would be healthy. When I came back from home, I couldn't watch MASH. It was too close. I just could not watch it. Now I love it to death.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, why should I watch something and then I might not?
Right.
I think it probably just make me angrier.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the stories that, or the things that they put, movies that they had on Vietnam were so inaccurate. It just makes you angry to watch it because you go, eh.
Right. I think. Like that, that's not what really happened.
Nah.
That's not real.
Nah. Okay. White Elephant? They thought that if they painted the helicopter's medevacs white and put a red cross on it, that the VC wouldn't shoot at them. Well,
no.
That didn't. That didn't work.
That didn't work, huh?
That didn't work. This is just the helipad. Well, the helicopters would come in with the wounded. One time we had a cutaway scare.
Then we were told that there was a 45-foot tidal wave coming towards us. And we had to get all the patients packed up to get ready to be medevaced. I mean, they were going to come down with helicopters. Like, so it's like, okay, what did you want to take with you? Because you knew that you couldn't take a whole lot. I took my cassettes and my cassette player because I thought, well, we always can have music. But we pulled out IVs, deep lines, all this stuff, and we were on the pad itself with these patients on litters when someone called up and said it was a false alarm.
Oh my God! How does that happen? A false alarm? Oh.
Hey, hurry up and wait. What can I say? get them all together. But anyway, here you can see the concertina wire,
right, and on the beach,
and there, because it's from inside.
Mm-hmm.
This was at one time one of the clinic areas.
Mm-hmm.
The chapel. They had people get married there.
Hmm.
Here's a bunker. But no one would go in it because half the time there were rats or snakes in there, so you didn't want to go.
You'd rather take your chances?
Yeah.
Outside of the bunker?
There's a guard tower, so you can see them sitting out there.
Uh-huh.
Well, around, you can see right here, here's a bunker. Round the hooches were barrels of sand and sandbags, so that if the explosion came in, you know, that you were sort of protected. This is what they call a deer roast calendar. You got it, it's 365 days, and you colored off a day. You knew how many days you had left before you went home.
Where's your last day on there?
Somewhere around in here.
Mm-hmm.
You had to go down to Saigon and go through the pee test and all that stuff to make sure that you weren't on a lot of drugs and stuff like that.
Right. I guess that was a problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, big time.
Mm-hmm.
This is my friend Gina. She lives in Beaumont, Texas. She's a lady that's had 5 vessel bypass surgery so far.
Is she in a gown? Surgical gown? Is
that, it's a nightgown.
That's a nightgown, okay.
We were always getting in trouble. We were out there were the, our chief nurse, our assistant chief nurses were always going to give us an Article 15 reprimand. We did things like we got tired. Her room was on the other side of mine. There's that cardboard. I mean that panel wall stuff between us. And so I took a can opener and pried it open enough so that we had a door in between our two rooms. Well, the chief nurse got just bent out of shape because that's military property. You're destroying military property. Next time we were on a gurney, we'd just taken patients out the evac bus, and we were running, riding on it, and she came around the corner, and there she was. She wasn't happy with us on that one. Then the Godfather was coming to Da Nang. It was going to be at the Air Force.
The Godfather?
The Godfather. It was just being shown.
Oh, okay.
The movie. Okay. And so we wanted to go see it. We were all the night nurses. We really wanted to go see it, really. So we all got up at noon. We hijacked the Arabac bus to go over to the Air Force base so we could watch a movie and get back in time to work. Of course, we got into trouble for that one, too. But
what kind of punishment would you get for something like that?
Just verbal, minor. Get on, just verbal. Right. You can see here's the sand mm-hmm. barrels.
Right.
On top
I think
of.
There's a perception, at least maybe by people from my generation who grew up watching shows like MASH and China Beach, that that regulations were more lax among nurses and doctors
mm-hmm.
than maybe other
mm-hmm.
servicemen. Is that accurate?
No, that's
Is
right.
that part accurate?
Right. Because people called each other by their first names. It's a medical thing. I mean, even in the Desert Storm, I mean, the rule was you can call me by my first name unless somebody of higher ranking comes around, or they do, you have to, you know, and most of the people in the enlisted were your buddies, I mean, because you worked so hard with them all the time.
Mm-hmm. But so. Did you find that it was more lax among the nurses and doctors than it was the other soldiers, definitely?
Oh, yeah. She lives in Oregon.
What
It says, "May God bring peace to you and yours, Vietnam."
Yeah, and she was there Christmas time. There was a photo lab over at the Air Force Base. So she.
This is a postcard. Yes. Yeah. Okay. She's sent home.
She lives in Oregon. I don't know where these two. This was when I first got there. This was a neuro on one side of the Quonset hut, and then it was urology on the other side.
On this photo, the old drinking gang.
Yep. Yeah. She lives about 3 hours away from me now. We don't know where these two went to. Mm-hmm. She has stress syndrome. She doesn't work at all now.
Was that something that developed just soon after she got back, or?
I didn't hear from. Yeah. I didn't know where she was until we ran into each other at the dedication of the Nurses Monument
in D.C.
Uh-huh. So that's like, almost 30 years. I had no idea where she was, what was going on with her.
What was that like when you, did you just see each other and instantly recognize each other?
Oh, yeah. We were just sitting talking then, and it had just the best of all time, and I've been up to her place. She's been down to mine, and we've done some traveling already together, so.
What do you think about the Nurses Monument in D.C.?
Oh. Have you ever been there?
I've never been there.
Some of my buddies here.
Oh, yeah.
So these were all, this lady was in a Desert Storm with me, but she's retired. But she was the lady I told you that was in Pleiku a year before me.
Okay.
Here's this Fran. And
what year was this? Do you remember?
Hold on. Get my brain cells. I want to say it was 10 years ago now. There you go. There was about 15 of us who wanted to go, and one of the nurses got hold of the Air Force, the Air Guard, and they were bringing the Marine Band to Louisville to play for Veterans Day. So we got rooms reserved up in Virginia, Arlington, and we took the hop to Andrews and had the band waiting for us, went to the room, and then the next morning the chief of the whole United States National Guard and her husband came to have breakfast with us, and then they took us to Pentagon City, and we got on the metro to go to where the parade was. And actually, we took Steve Collier's, still Channel 18. He was in the garden pad. Talked him to come along, and he to do video. I mean, he had. I did my 15 minutes of fame on TV because he was interviewing me there. Oh, wow. at doing this. Well, and it's just like the wall when you go. There's memorabilia all around it, and you know that they've got, I think, 3 warehouses now full memorabilia from the wall.
Seems like it was a long time coming and getting a monument for nurses there, though.
But the Nurses Monument got there after the men. And the Korean Monument got there, and the Women's War Memorial got there. We still don't have the World War II Monument.
Yeah.
This is the
that must have been a pretty emotional
trip
for you.
Oh, it was. Because I mean, people that I hadn't seen.
You were just running into them.
Oh, yeah. I was meant to run into these people. I ran into them, you know. And the men that were there, and the people from Canada came, people from Australia came who'd served in Vietnam. These guys here, these are the 3 soldiers met, represent all the men.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little dip valley. And in the evening, it cools down the bronze. In the
about 10 or 11 in the morning when the sun hits them, they start sweating. And it looks so real. I mean, we're talking about real, real, real.
Did you have names that you were looking for on the wall when you went?
Yeah, everybody does. My sister won't go back and look at it. She's seen it once, and that's it.
Your sister was in
there? No, she just knew some people who was there, and friends. She won't. Yeah, she won't go.
She can't deal with it.
No, she doesn't want to. She doesn't have to.
Yep. One thing I wanted to ask you about, one of the uniforms that you donated,
uh-huh.
As I recall, the pant legs on one of them look as if they've been cut off or they're really frayed. Okay, so it was 1993,
right.
November 11th was the dedication.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
but
because
it was
too long for me.
Okay. Well, I wondered if you had just cut them off yourself. And
yeah, because one size fits all on military uniforms.
And obviously, that wouldn't be regulation to cut off your pants. Could anybody get away with doing that, or was that again something that was more lax?
They never see because you had them blouse.
Oh yeah, you had them in your combat boots, so they would.
No, or you had the rubber things and you had them rolled up underneath, so no one knew.
No one knew.
Okay. Go ahead.
How did the other doctors treat, or the doctors treat you when you were there? Did they treat you with respect?
A lot of them were drunk all the time. Mm-hmm. Just like they do nowadays. I mean, there's no. I'm in a university hospital. I'm not in a private hospital. Private hospital, there's a little difference between nurses and doctors, but a university hospital, you know, everybody's kind of the same type
same.
Thing. You party together, have a good time together.
Mm-hmm. Back to your uniforms, they're in really good condition, and I'm amazed that you had the foresight to preserve them. You know, a lot of people use their uniforms to mow the yard in or paint their house in, and they just end up, you know, being destroyed. And so I'm just wondering why you.
It's like these pictures.
You.
A lot of people. Got rid of their pictures. A lot of people went through divorces and the pictures got thrown out.
Didn't
want
any reminders.
You know, the wife was there. She threw burned stuff. The guys, no, they didn't want my reminders.
But you held on to yours and preserved them.
Because I'm a collector.
Okay. Just your personality to
I have the, when we were in Desert Storm on the dock, okay, big warehouse, we were waiting to go to a staging area. And we took over one of the soddy bathrooms for the ladies,
mm-hmm.
And we cleaned it and Cloroxed it, and everybody had 2 to 4 hour tours around the clock to keep strangers from out of the bathroom. I have that list of people.
You're a pack rat. That's, we love pack rats in the museum field, so.
Well, yeah, I realize that. Let me see here. That was from Desert Storm. A little cheat sheet for patients.
Okay.
So we could talk
so you could communicate with them.
Right?
They could see the image and see it's in English and then it's in the Arabic.
Arabic. There's that bathroom list.
Yeah. Great. That's really great.
So yeah, I've packed that.
Go on. Can you tell me what was, this is really a 2-part question, but
go ahead.
Can you remember what was one of your most difficult days, and then what was one of your best days when you were there?
It was one night we had a lot of incoming. A lot of casualties were coming in. And I always had music playing, and you've heard the theme score from JC Superstar.
Mm-hmm.
We were working that fast. We were right in tempo
with the
music.
How long were you in doing that?
I can't remember now.
It had been hours.
Oh yeah, it had to be because we had to put patients on the floors. We had to put mattresses over some of the patients. Electricity went out, so we didn't have electricity for the ventilators. Still had more wounded coming in. What the good day.
A good day. What was, what, do you have a memory of a
probably going to see day? Probably going to see the Godfather and getting away with it. I tell you the story, my friend Annie there lives in Indianapolis tells people. We'd had casualties come in. There was a pre-op holding. It was two Quonset huts with just striker frames so that you put the litters down as they came in. Well, we had a whole bunch there, and this one guy she was stripping him, getting everything, and half his finger was gone. So she just absentmindedly picked it up and stuck it in her pocket. She said after that night, she went in, stripped her clothes off because they were all bloody and leaving for Mama's son to wash them. Then she said she'd just gotten off to sleep and she heard this blood-curdling scream, and she went out and she had the finger was floating in the basin of water.
Oh, gosh. Oh. And you said that Mama-san was the person who did the laundry?
Yeah, that you would hire them for so many piastres. That's the money they conversed. Mm-hmm. And so they'd wash and iron your clothes for you. But you had to watch your boots because they'd rip them off because laid nurse size because they could wear them.
They could wear them.
Right.
Are there any specific patients that you'll never forget?
Oh. Trying to think. That's our only, this one of a few American little blonde-haired boys we had. His tonsils taken out.
What was he doing over
there? A missionary. He's with his family. Had a little baby that was newborn that we all got to hold and take care of. We had one little baby that got fragged in his belly, and we had to take care of it. Some of the guys, you know, I think probably the guys I had at Walter Reed's would stick in my mind more than some of the guys over there, just because there were so many that went through. You mean because you patched them up and then they got medevaced out. So unless some of them had to stick around to go back out the field, one of the guys I can remember. All right, my uncle Marcus Welby was TV right at that time. I was making a Mars phone call. Mars phone calls, there's amateur ham radios throughout the world, patch you through. Mm-hmm. And every time you say something, you have to say, how you doing, over. So it's not like regular phone.
Right.
And then I'm there talking, and this one guy, he's huge, big guy, black guy. I mean, we're talking about 200 pounds solid.